and we are here with Ryan, who has just spent $800 on this lovely storage unit. Let's turn it over to him and see if he could make some of that money back with the items we have inside.
All right, so I brought a couple of select items from the storage unit over. I was wondering if you could give me a quick appraisal. Yeah,
let's take a look. You've got a nice set of antique hubcaps here. They're in good condition. You probably get about $200 for those if you find the right buyer. That looks like an antique weather vane. That could be worth some money.
I was really curious about this item over here with all the wires and the collapsible panels.
Oh, right. That is a guy in a time machine.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. It's actually a pretty common piece. Crops up a lot in storage units these days.
Huh.
Really, the value depends on the man inside.
So there's a guy in there.
Yeah, if you look through the panels, I know it's kind of opaque, but you can see him in there.
All right, and he's time traveling.
Yes, he's currently time traveling.
How much do you think I could get for this guy?
Well, you see, it really depends on the guy in there and when he's coming from and how much future knowledge he has. But he is mint in package, so that definitely increases the value. I'd say you could probably get about $350, $375 for that.
I was hoping for $500. How about the weather vane?
Welcome to Ragnarok, your home of the Nerdpocalypse.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Ragnarok. This is episode 24, an interview with Larry Kenny, or the kitty cat conundrum.
I love kitty cats.
They're so cute.
It sounds like the most adorable conundrum ever.
I know. It really is.
I mean, like,
Schrodinger was right on.
I don't even
may or may not be a conundrum.
I don't even want to find a solution to this conundrum because it's just so adorable.
Like, do you think anyone would care about Schrodinger's paradox if he used, like, a possum?
No,
Schrodinger's possum
not.
Paradox.
It may that adds a third element because it might be plain dead.
Well, really,
that's true.
Playing possum.
So what about maybe Schrodinger's alligator paradox?
All right.
What if...
I don't think anyone would care.
I would not
want... alligator
wanna,
in a box.
I would not want to open that box.
the experiment would sort of solve itself. You could open the box, but there's a fucking alligator in there.
What if...
it's alive, it's pissed.
What if you two, instead of being filled of kitty cat videos, would kill of possum videos?
That would be interesting.
I'd watch
they're
it.
Just now, they're playing dead, and all of a sudden,
now I'm going to have to go home and YouTube possum videos and see what comes up.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right, but anyway, we're really excited tonight because we're going to have with us Larry Kenny, who you probably know, maybe, as the voice of Lion-O from Thundercats. This is his biggest claim to fame, amongst other things.
The original Thundercats.
The original Thundercats, yes. So that's what we're all really excited to have him here, so we're waiting for him to call in.
Mm-hmm. We should introduce ourselves.
I'm Alex.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Eric.
I'm Meyer.
Oh, shit. That reminds me. Meyer, my mom wanted me to go out and get some milk. Do you think you could just run to the store?
For all the kitty cats?
Yeah, the kitty cats need their milk.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
So if you can
I gotta get it.
We promise we won't start without it.
We'll make sure to wait.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, guys. I'll be back.
Thanks, Meyer.
All right, thanks.
Thank you.
Got some milk.
All right, okay. Let's start this interview.
Yeah, let's do this.
We'll be right back.
We are here with Larry Kenny, who you probably know from this little show called Thundercats.
I've heard of
it. You may have heard of it. He's done a lot of other work, though, on radio and television. And so, Mr. Kenny, thank you very much for joining us.
Well, thank you guys for having me very much. How are you?
Now, do you prefer Larry or Mr. Kenny?
Oh, I prefer Larry. Thank
you. All right. Larry it is then. All right.
Mr. Kenny makes me sound old. I appreciate your reverence and respect, but Larry is great.
Well, if I just started out calling you Larry, my mom would probably yell at me. So I have to defer to Mr. Kenny first.
Very good, very good.
Okay, well, you know, we did a little research. So tell us if we got this wrong, but we heard that you started your career in radio when you were 15 years old. Is that correct?
That's exactly right. Yes, I was actually 2 weeks before my 16th birthday.
Wow.
So I was 15. Yeah, that was in you ready for this? 1963.
Wow.
So you see, you're
about
a long time ago, gentlemen.
So you're like 25 now, about?
Exactly. On August 5th, I'll be 25. You have done your research, yeah? You're as bad as Matt that I am, and you've done some good research.
Well, so how did you, I mean, that's pretty young to, you know, start a career like that. How did you get into it?
You know, I was looking back on it, it amazes me because I grew up in a small town in Illinois, and our high school happened to have a radio class, and in fact, the radio class broadcast a 10-minute show every day, every school day, over the telephone lines and over a local radio station. But we had a studio and everything. And for some reason, I decided to take this class. It probably got me out of a math class or something. But at that time, I had actually been for over a year. I'd been a sports reporter for the local newspaper. I covered high school basketball and baseball and football. Yeah. And I thought that's what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. I loved being a sports kid, you know, sports writer.
Right.
But then, so I took this class. I think it was my second year of high school. And at the end of the class, a guy from the local radio station came in. Actually, the station across the river in Peoria, a much bigger town, Peoria, Illinois. And long story short, he said, we're looking for one guy to do a one-hour show a week on Saturdays. It's a public service show. In other words, we don't have commercials on it, but one guy from your high school, one guy from another high school in Peoria, will be doing this show called School Scope. And so, you know, anybody wants to audition for it. So I went up the next Saturday and auditioned, and they put me on the air that same day, and that's how I started in radio. It was a one-hour week show, and this other guy and I just talked about what was happening at different schools, you know, what schools would be playing, whichever school in football, and stuff like that. And then I went from there on to doing weekends as a disc jockey on that show. We played records on the show, by the way, on the School Scope thing. You know, we were playing like My Boyfriend's Back by the Angels. And the Beatles had just come out, you know, so it was pretty good. And then I went on to do weekends, and then they gave me a summer job and then a full-time job. And that's how it started. So I feel very fortunate. I mean, at the age of 50, and by the way, by my first day behind the microphone, I knew this was it. This, you know, like sports, I was going to do radio.
So
I didn't realize until much later, like when I was graduating college and nobody else knew what they were, even seniors, you know, had no idea what they were going to do, you know, for a living. And I had already been in radio for 6 years.
Wow. Know? That's definitely an advantage on everyone, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure. I was very lucky.
Yeah. So once you got in front of that mic, you just kind of knew that's what you wanted to do?
Yeah, the first day I did, I had always been a class clown, believe it or not. And I was doing little crazy voices, you know, and telling jokes and stuff at school. Because I found out early on that it made the girls laugh. And if you made girls, if you made girls laugh, man, that's, you know, that was the greatest thing in the world even back then.
Yeah, definitely.
And you get invited to all the best parties and stuff like that. So I was a nutcase in school, you know.
Wow.
In fact, I remember so many teachers all my school life who would say, you know, Larry, I hope when you grow up you find a way to make a decent living with your cute little voices and your funny jokes. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. I mean, you figured it out, so good for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the problem is they're all dead now, so I can't, you know, I can't.
You can't go back and brag, yeah. So, I mean, speaking of funny voices, you did, I don't want to say funny voices, but, you know, you also got a lot of notoriety doing a lot of impressions and things for the IMA show, right?
Yeah, for 35 years. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was on on radio, and then the last 10 or 12 years we were on television as well with Imus.
And what was
and,
that like?
Yeah, so that was 35 years I was with him.
That's a long time.
Yeah.
Especially since
I'm only 25, right?
Exactly. I don't know how you did that one, but you definitely got a head start there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what sort of things were you doing on the show then for 35 years?
Well, the running characters I did for most of that time were Richard Nixon, which was the first voice I did for him. He and I had worked in Cleveland, Ohio as disc jockeys for different stations at the same time, but had never met each other. And he was in Cleveland for about a year at this one station, and I was there, you know, for a year. And he left to go to New York. I left to go to Chicago, as both of us as disc jockeys.
Okay.
And one day I get a call from his engineer saying, Mr. Imus heard you on the air in Cleveland and always liked your stuff. I want to know if you'd like to do some character voices on his show. So for exactly a year, I was doing voices on his show in New York from Chicago, live every morning.
Wow.
And I had never met him, you know. And then finally I moved to New York a year after that and then started working on his show. And I finally got to see him. Ugly man, very ugly man.
Maybe that's why he's doing radio, right?
Yeah, well, he was an old radio guy, too. You know, he started on radio when he was about 17, I think. And we got along well, and it was a lot of fun. But after 35 years, I just decided I got sick and tired of getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning every day.
Understandable, yeah.
Yeah, I could see why that would grow tiresome.
Yeah.
So then how did you make the transition from radio work to voice acting?
Well, it's not really a transition because I, from the first job I had that I told you about when I was, 15, 16 years old, even then I was doing silly voices and stuff. I'd see something on television the night before, you know, and I'd stay up late like most kids had to. Well, I was supposed to be in bed too, but I didn't watch it. I would watch the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson through the keyhole, you know, in my bedroom.
Right.
And somebody like Jonathan Winters would be on there, you know, or Bob Newhart or somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And I would memorize their routines, and I would tell them at school the next day. And the kids all thought I made that stuff up. They didn't know who these guys were.
Sneaky.
And then when I started doing radio, I incorporated voices into my show. You know, I had quote people walking into the studio and saying something and walking out there.
Right.
And so it really became a thing. And then after I had moved on up into larger markets, like when I got to Cleveland, I discovered that you can make a lot more money doing commercials, radio and TV commercials, than you can sitting there for 4 hours playing records. So I said, the heck with that. Actually, I kept doing the radio show.
Mm-hmm.
But I was in Cleveland in 1970 where I really started doing commercials, and then when I got to New York, of course, that translated into auditioning for everything like animated shows, and that's where Thundercats came in.
Right, which, you know, brings us to the need of my next question. How did you get that role on Thundercats?
Like everything else, I auditioned for it. The typical situation is and was that my agent called me one day in 1983. It was probably about August of 83, and said, we have an audition for you, let's say, next Monday or Tuesday at 11 a.m. for this new animated series called Thundercats. So you show up at your given time, you know, my time was like 11 o'clock or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I later found out after we started doing the show that they auditioned 400 actors in both New York and Los Angeles for the show. So, yeah, so when I heard that, I thought, wow, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good odds, and I got the role, you know. So I got there, and there are pictures all over the walls of the illustrations of the characters. They handed you a synopsis of what the show was about, and what each, briefly, a paragraph about each character, you know, what he was like. And then when it was your turn to go into the studio, you gave them an idea. You told them which characters you'd like to read for. I said, I want to read for Lion-O and Jackal-Man.
Mm.
And I read for both of those, and I got both of those.
Wow.
And so a few days, you know, it's like everything that in our business is you go audition, and then you go to another audition, another, and they kind of forget about these things. And then two or three days later, if you're lucky, your agent calls and says you got the parts, you know?
Yeah. Wow.
So at that time, it was just another job.
So, do you remember at all, I don't know, what that paragraph that they handed you said and what it inspired in you that made you do the voice that you did?
That's a really good question. Is this Alex or Eric or Ryan?
Ryan.
That's Ryan. I didn't think Alex was smart enough to ask the question.
I'm really not, so.
I'm mostly kidding, you know that.
It's
a very good question. I'm usually asked the same questions or whatever, which is understandable, but because that makes me think and that hurts my head. Yes, I hadn't thought about this in what's almost been 30 years now, but I do remember the paragraph that they had written about Lion-O was, of course, that he was very young and that he had been kept, as they moved from Thundera to the New Earth, he had been kept young in a capsule. And when they got there, he was a young boy, but he was going to have to become the lord of the Thundercats, and that the show was going to be about his transition from a boy to a man and accepting the challenges, you know, the sort of moments. And it said beyond that, it said we want something not quote cartoony. They wanted real human voices for the Thundercats. Of course, with the other characters, the mutants and things, we got to play and have a lot of fun.
Right.
Like for Jackal Man, I got to say, we must get the Thundercats here. But for Lion-O and then for Tigra, Chitara, and Panther, they said it should be a human voice. You should believe them as a human being.
Right.
And it turns out that for Lion-O, obviously, Lion-O's voice is pretty much just basically my voice.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It's not something I had to do to strain to try to sound. The only difference, I guess, is that as I'm sitting here talking to you, I say things like, you know, sort of omens come to my hand, I, Lion-O, command it. Mm-hmm. But on the show, it would be, you know, sort of omens come to my hand, I, Lion-O, command it. But who talks like that? Who's not talking like that, you know?
He just sounds really excited about everything.
It was basically my voice, just with a little drama, a little acting. And ironically, on the new series, when Warner Brothers announced the new series last year and hired me to do Claudius, who's Lion-O's father, it was kind of a natural. I didn't have to really strain to sound older because I'm 30 years older. So my voice today is basically, you know, 30 years older. Whatever.
Yeah.
So it was not a stretch. Just I did kind of in certain parts of the first two episodes, which is the only ones I laughed at. I died, as you know, in the second episode.
Oh, okay.
But I did put on a little bit of age, like this. You know, I said, Lion-O, you've got to learn to be the leader of the Thundercats. But that was acting too.
Yeah. So I mean, was it hard for you talking about the new show to sort of? I mean, obviously they wanted to harken back to the original show. But yeah, you're playing a different character. So what did you do? You said you made him sound older. But was there anything you could do to sort of differentiate yourself, you know, differentiate those two characters?
I didn't really have to, because Will Friedle, who's the new Lion-O, is doing a wonderful job.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't sound like his Lion-O, young Lion-O, which is what he plays,
right.
It did not sound like the Lion-O I did on the original series.
Okay.
Yeah, so it wasn't like we had to make sure that I sounded a lot different than what he was doing.
Right.
So I just went in again and just pretty much did my current voice, except with some more drama, you know. And I got to say, and in the first episode, I got to say, I'm there, you know.
Yeah.
And the crowd went wild.
Of course they did. So when you first, you know, when you found out that you got the part, what was your original opinion of the show? Because, I mean, you have to admit, you know, a bunch of talking cats fighting evil and everything like that. It's sort of a silly concept on paper.
Well, it was the first animated show I had ever auditioned for. And, of course, I hadn't been watching animated cartoon series, if you want to call them that, mm-hmm. at that particular time, because I was 30-some years old. I was 31 or 32 years old.
Right.
Now, my kids had, at that time, well, actually, my kids were not even born yet, my youngest two. Anyway, I grew up with a cartoon fan like everybody else does, but my experience was, when I was a kid, of course, was Looney Tunes, you know, and Mel Blanc and people like that.
Right.
And And the thing that surprised us all when we heard we were going to audition for an animated series, television series, it was that it was being done in New York, because up until that time, all of the animation at that time, mm-hmm. things like the Ninja Turtles and He-Man, She-Ra, all that was all done in California. Mm. And so we were kind of shocked at first that they're going to do an animated series here, and we thought, that's great, that's wonderful, you know. And to get to your question, what do I think of the series? Is that what you asked me?
Well, I mean, what your initial thought, like when, you know, that first script?
Well, it's hard to think back exactly what we thought the first script, you know, because we're all professional actors and we all were happy to get the job.
Right.
And we all knew that if it got, you know, the first 13 episodes went well, that it could become a long-term thing. We had no idea it would become the iconic institution it's become.
Right.
But I remember, chat. You know, we actors would do a rehearsal, and then you take a break for coffee or something. And I remember Earl Hammond, especially, who was Mumra, saying, you know, this stuff is well-written. And I said something like, I hadn't really noticed. because let's face it, especially back then, I was kind of a cocky young actor, and I'd look at the script and I'd go, my line, bullshit, 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 my line, blah, 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 yada, yada, oh, here I am again, you know.
Yeah.
And I never paid too much attention to how well it was written, but once he mentioned that, and then, of course, as the series went on, and then you go home and watch it, you know, I remember saying to my wife, this thing is really well done. It's not just, you know, I can see adults watching this. It's well done. And I was looking back on it now and comparing it to what else was there. There's some good things on the air then, but I don't think any of them had the quality of writing and animation and of course, acting that ours had.
Right. Mm-hmm. So then, you know, going back to, you know, before, you know, you mentioned that, you know, you weren't really paying attention to the scripts until someone pointed out that it was good. So, you know, looking back on it now, so many years later, and like you said, it became an institution, and, you know, they're reviving the show again for a younger audience, and people are still watching the original now. What do you think about that, you know, that legacy that you helped create for the show?
Well, it means a lot to me. I've gotten, over the years, so many letters and now emails. I mean, I used to get letters from people before the internet and computers, from people who would write to me and tell me what Thundercats meant to them growing up. And it was beyond, a lot of them were, the ones I kept were beyond just, hey, it was a groovy show, we dug it, you know.
Right.
I got not a small amount of letters and emails from people who told me in varying degrees of detail about childhoods that were not pleasant.
Mm-hmm.
And you can understand where I'm coming from, I think.
Yeah,
right.
And so many of them said that for whatever reason it was that their childhood was not what it should have been, they could go into their room and close the door and watch Thundercats for half an hour. They would forget all that stuff and they could be kids again. And that means a lot to me.
Yeah,
and that's why over the years I've always been very careful, all of us have, to be protective of the I don't want to say the legend. What is it? What's the word you used? I'm sorry.
The legacy.
Thank you. That's exactly the word. This must not be Alec. This
no, that was. I'm going to take credit for that one.
Legacy, that's right.
Yeah.
And so I don't want to get too, you know, too nerdy or maudlin here, but, well, the show is nerd, right?
Yeah, we're a nerd podcast. Get as nerdy as you want.
It's cool to be nerdy now. That's a great thing.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was a nerd when I was a kid, and you used to kind of hide it until you ran across another nerd down the street that was hiding being a nerd, and then you could just, you know, sword fight all day.
Right.
You
know.
But now it's cool to be a nerd.
Yeah, definitely. So, for you, you know, I mean, you know, you've done radio, like I said, radio, television, commercials, all of that just requires, you know, solely your voice. People aren't looking at your body, which a lot of actors use to convey emotions mm-hmm. and things like that. So, do you find it difficult to convey your entire performance solely through your voice?
No, I've never done much straight acting, meaning not voice acting. I'm always been starting out on the radio, of course.
Mm-hmm.
You learn how to convey your meaning and get a joke across without being seen, without being able to gesture and things like that. So that's probably where I got, you know, that was the background and the training that I got. And I have done some, I did a couple of soap operas back in the late 70s, early 80s, and a couple of films, and I just didn't like it. First of all, I didn't like the time it took, you know, because when you're used to doing the voiceover, you know, you're used to going someplace and being in a studio for 20 minutes, and they say thank you very much and give you a check, and then you go to the hotel.
Right.
So I didn't, when I started doing the on-camera, I found that you had to get there at 6 in the morning and then do a read-through, and then you sit down for 2 hours while they block it out and just the lighting, and I just hated that. But so I don't find it difficult to act, you know, with just the voice. I think most actors who are on screen, of course, you're on screen and you're being seen, so you have to act with your whole body. But I found the good ones can come into a studio and use just their voice and act with that. So I think it's a talent that doesn't require being seen or gesturing or anything like that.
Wow, okay.
It's a little different. I have been people, you know, who've come in from TV and theater and just don't quite know how to do it, you know. It is something, especially when you're doing commercials, because then you're in a time constraint, 30 seconds.
Right.
Yeah.
Got 30 seconds, got to get everything in there.
Exactly, yeah.
So maybe, you know, so for some of our more technical-minded listeners, could you just walk us through quickly the process that went into you, like, recording the show? Like, you'd show up in the studio in the morning. What happened?
Well, that's a good question, too. We, of course, with animation, you always do the voices first. And they animate to the voices.
Okay.
It would be terribly difficult to have them, you know, to go into the studio and have them say, okay, this episode has been already been completely animated. What you must do now is watch the screen and make sure your lips match up with it while acting. Now, there are times when you have to do that very infrequently, but there were times during the filming where a couple of days, well, you do the voice session, and then maybe a month later, they would say at another voice session, they would say for another episode, they would pull you aside and say, Larry, they just animated that episode, you know, 119, and something didn't match up. Could you go back in and just do another thing?
Right.
And then you would watch the screen and try to match up the lips. Maybe they changed somebody's name or something like that, but that was very infrequent. So we worked on Thundercats. We worked 4 days a month. People asked why. Well,
you said 4 days a month?
4 days a month, that's all.
Wow.
And I'll tell you the reason. Well, let me start this way. When we first started doing the show, we actually first started recording the voices for Thundercats in October of 1983. Now, it didn't go on the air until, I think, February of 85.
Wow.
But we had to record the first 13 episodes, and we did those in pretty rapid order. I think we worked like 3 days a week until those were done. So once you've got 13 episodes, now they can try to sell it to a network. So you have to have at least 13 episodes of something before the network will buy it.
Okay.
They won't just buy one or two episodes. What's the point, you know?
Yeah.
So once the network had bought it, I think it was ABC, I'm not sure, then they've already got some more written, you know, but you start. But the point is, about at a certain point, you get to a point where we worked on Thursdays and Fridays of 1 week a month. Let's say the third week of every month,
okay,
we go in on Thursday morning and we record two shows on Thursday. We record one show, have lunch, record episode two.
Mm-hmm.
Then we come back Friday morning, record episode three, have lunch, record episode four.
Mm-hmm.
And then we did it that way. And the reason you have to do that is after a number of episodes, you have to give, I mean, as voice actors, we could record every day three episodes. It didn't bother us.
Right.
But you've got to give the writers time to come up with new stories.
Right.
True.
Exactly. And you've got to give the animators time to animate the ones you already recorded before they go on the air. So that's why that process.
So it takes a lot less time to read a script than to draw out the whole thing.
Oh, sure. As actors, we could go in there. You give it, we ended up doing 130 episodes. We could have done 130 episodes in 3 or 4 months.
Right.
But you see, you don't go into a show with 130 episodes already written.
Right.
Yeah.
You don't even know things you're ever going to get on the air. So
right.
They probably wrote maybe 20 or 22 episodes, something like that, to begin with. Now they all sit back and say, let's see if this thing goes or not.
Yeah.
And once you've got it sold to a network, then they make the phone calls and everybody starts busting their butts, writing new episodes, animating the old previous episodes.
So when you were in there, did you have interaction with the other voice actors, or were you just like in a booth recording by yourself?
No. Wonderfully, back in those days, we all worked together. Everybody was in the room all the time.
Wow.
Unless there were times when, let's say, in a particular episode, your character didn't have too many lines, you know, mm-hmm. you might just go out in the lounge or, you know, have some coffee or something. But most of the time, they wanted us to all be in the studio, and we all wanted to be in the studio. It was an ensemble.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And even if we knew that, let's say, one character was going to be, for the next 25 minutes, was going to be the only guy being recorded because he had a long soliloquy or something, we would all stay in there. It's kind of like when you're doing a play, you know, you're an ensemble, you're a team.
Mm-hmm.
And plus it makes for better outtakes.
I'm sure it does, yeah.
You heard them, I'm sure.
Yeah. So now, you've also done a lot of commercial work in addition to, you know, Thundercats and your time as radio. So what type of project would you say is your favorite thing to work on?
Well, this sounds like a setup, but I'm being honest, Thundercats was the most fun thing I've ever done. But mostly because of, well, like I said, it was well written. It became a huge success.
Right.
That means a lot to any actor to be a part of something as successful and as iconic as it has become.
Mm-hmm.
But mostly because of the people I worked with. The cast, you know, Ben Lipton, Peter Newman, Earl Hammond, Earl Hyman, I'm probably leaving somebody out, and I should do that, Jerry and Raphael. We just had so much fun, you know, and the people who were directed it and engineered it, and everybody, it was just a wonderful, and we worked together for years, you know.
Yeah.
We worked for, I think, over 2 years on Thundercats, because we did 130 episodes, but after Thundercats, in fact, even before Thundercats ended, we still had about 20 episodes of Thundercats to go when they hired us, most of us, same people, to do, Rankin Bass hired us to do Silverhawks, which
right.
was another series. We did 65 of those. And then after that, we did Tiger Sharks. We only did about 30 episodes of that. It was not, it had run its course, this half human, half something else thing. But we all also, most of us on that cast, worked also for Rankin Bass on many of their holiday, Christmas specials, animated specials. Mm-hmm. And they still run a lot, like A Star for Jeremy, 12 Days of Christmas, Life and Adventures of Santa Claus. You know,
wow.
So we were working together for three and a half years, so you can imagine we really became a close-knit group.
Yeah, I would imagine. So now, what are you working, is there anything you're working on now that you'd like to mention? Like, what's next for Larry Kenney? Are you done? I hope not.
No. Well, people ask me all the time, are you going to retire? And I say, what? I'm going to stop talking. I mean,
that's true.
I mean, I'm going to be talking until I die. I might as well get paid for it.
There you go.
Yeah.
I'm still doing commercials. It's what do I have on here? Now it's been on for a long time. Skittles Candy, you know the
right.
Skittles.
Yeah. Mm.
And the guy at the end that says, "Peel Rainbow, taste Rainbow."
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And that's the same voice I used for years on VH1 for, it's the first week of February 2009, the best week ever! That was me. Yeah, that was me. And I'm still doing kind of Chocula and Cocoa Puffs.
Right, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I still, every year, I'm the announcer on public on PBS for the Mark Twain Prize for American Humor.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
On that one, I do my what I call my Oscar voice. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Billy Bristol.
That's definitely, you know, you should go into radio. You really have a voice for it.
Ah, there's no money in it.
So, you know, one last question. You know, what did you think when you heard that they were going to be rebooting Thundercats?
Well, my first thought was they better not screw it up or I'm going to kick some butt. Because that's what the fans were saying, you know.
Yeah.
The first mention was about 3 or 4 years ago when Warner Brothers announced that they were going to do a CGI feature-length Thundercats film.
Mm-hmm.
They had already hired a screenwriter and a director. And so as soon as that happened, all the Internet's fan sites, or Thundercats fan sites, the wonderful fans that keep the thing going, even for all those years, you know. And so I started seeing on those fan sites things about, I bet they're going to ruin it, I bet they're not going to do that.
You know, right.
I bet they're not going to stay true to the code of Thundera. So then they announced that they were going to put the movie on the back burner and they were going to do a television series. And I got the call from my agent that they would like me to do Claudius, and I said, well, let's do some research. And I found out that the people involved at Warner Brothers, Daniel Norton, who's the head writer and one of the illustrators, and then when I went out there to meet them all, they all are huge Thundercats fans. They grew up being Thundercats fans.
That's good, yeah.
And they told me that their first priority was, well, I guess what they told me, of course.
Right.
Our first priority, and our first priority was to get Larry Kenny to play Claude. That's what they told me. And by God, they did. I don't know how they did it, but they talked me into it.
Wow.
And then they said the main thing, the main goal they had was to do a show that would state that the original fans would still love. They didn't want to piss off the original fans.
Okay.
Now, it had to be new, it had to be different. Otherwise, what's the point of making it as another series? You know?
Right.
It had to look different. The characters had to sound a little bit different, you know.
Yeah.
And but they stayed very true, I think, to the original, and the fan response has been fantastic.
Yeah. All right.
That's great.
So we have one last question. We asked this of all of our interviewees. It's sort of a non sequitur to everything.
Boxers.
Okay, then we have another question for you.
I'm sorry, I thought you were going to ask me what's the question?
Well, we came up with this concept early on in our development. We came up with something we called the Groz, but we never defined it. We don't know what it is. So we ask all of our interviewees what they think the Groz is.
The Groz?
The Groz. It's Graaz.
What I think the Groz is, and yes. There's no
wrong answer. Whatever you think it is.
And it could be in any area of life. Or what is the Groz?
Yes, anything. What comes to mind when you hear that?
Absolutely anything.
Well, what comes to my mind first is, I don't know, somebody like Betty Davis wanting to get stoned. She's calling, where is the Groz? And I can't find the bong that goes with it. I think that's what the Groz is. Of course, I am stoned.
Okay.
Just kidding.
You know, it's okay if you are. Eric is too.
Oh, right. Totally.
Larry. Thank you very much for taking the time to speak to us today.
Thank you guys so much.
Before you go, do you think we could get a Thundercats hoe? I know you probably get that all the time, but we have to ask.
Of course, we'll do that as I fade out. The first Alex and Ryan and Eric, and I didn't have those names written down either. See?
Wow! Thank you.
Thank you
guys so much. Keep up the good work, all right?
Oh well, we'll certainly try.
We'll do our best.
Hang on 1 second. Lionel wants to say something.
Oh sure.
Sword of Omens, come to my hand. I, Lionel, command it. Thunder, 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 Thundercats! Oh!
They were at 2%, so I got Nilbog milk.
You're kind of gone a while.
It's, as I said, I didn't go all the way to Nilbog to get milk.
Oh, you went to Nilbog?
Damn.
Yeah.
Ooh,
that's really the only place to get Nilbog milk.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Alright. Well,
so
I guess
did I miss
could...
it?
Yeah. No, you didn't.
No.
Okay, so he hasn't called.
Right. And we,
no.
Okay. You know what? We're just going to leave in a big 35-minute long silence.
Yeah.
And hope that none of our listeners notice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And maybe they'll just picture like a really great interview.
What a
with Larry
jerk.
They'll fill in whatever.
What kind of jerk said he'd call us and doesn't call us?
I don't know.
What a
I'm sure he has a very good reason. He's a good guy.
Yeah,
I'm
sure.
Go to Larry Kenny's place and punch him in the nose.
I wouldn't do that.
No,
that's a bad idea. Yeah. Why don't you go upstairs and fill up the kitty cat's dishes with Nilbog milk? And we'll take a little break, and when we come back, Eric will talk about BronyCon.
Oh, and in the spirit of just jocularity, at the end of the show, we're going to joke around as if we did do the interviews and just kind of play along.
Yeah. Nobody let Meyer know.
I don't play around.
Yeah, nobody tell Meyer that we did the interview while he was out getting milk.
Oh.
What?
Shit.
Meyer hasn't gone upstairs yet.
Oh.
We're terrible at this.
Wonderful musical break.
It was quite lovely.
Yes, it was.
I enjoyed it.
We've shot Meyer up with some drugs, and he's okay now.
Oh, I'm on kitty cat drugs.
Well, then you're gonna love this, Meyer. Now that you're in a good mood again, Eric's gonna talk about BronyCon that he went to the other week. Mm-hmm. Isn't that great?
Maybe you should just go ahead and turn up his IV drip.
All right, here, Meyer. There's some more morphine.
The IV drip machine sounds a lot like you going boop.
I recorded the voice for it.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. I got a side gig doing voice work for medical equipment.
Huh. Just like the voice acting that we didn't have an interview about yet. Right?
No, we did. Meyer found out.
Remember? Oh, I forgot he found out.
Kitty cats.
All right.
I'm not as impressive as Larry Kenny because it's a very small market for medical equipment that needs voice work. But I know I do what I can. I'm working out my niche.
It's good. Yeah.
So, start somewhere. When and where was this BronyCon you went to?
All right, I went to BronyCon. It was on June 30th to July 1st. It was both days. There was 2 days, which is a lot different than the other BronyCons. Every other BronyCon was just a single day. This was too big to fit into one day.
It's not... You could say it was twice as much Brony.
It was 50% cooler.
It's 100% cooler.
No. It was only 50%
cooler.
50% cooler
would be a day and a half.
No, but it's only 50% cooler because the other ones were really cool already. They're like more cool than one would
they,
think.
They were super saturated with brony coolness.
Uh-huh.
That seems like a oxymoron to me, brony yeah. coolness. But continue. I'll try not yeah. to interject too many witty comments.
Great. I hope Meyer doesn't have any.
Kitty cats. Wait, I came up with one.
Oh, well, here we go.
He served that to you with a silver platter, Meyer. And all you said was kitty cat.
I'm on kitty cat. Listen.
Meyer's got his kitty drip going.
I got a joke. All right. You guys are called bronies, but I think you're jabronies.
Golf clap.
Jabro. There you go, world. That's
so
for you.
It was at the Meadowlands Convention Center. It was such a big difference because Ryan went to the first BronyCon with me, and just
it
the
was actually the second BronyCon because they had one in June last
year.
Oh,
I didn't know about this one. I didn't know about that one.
That one was just like in a single room. BronyCon has gotten like exponentially bigger every time they have it.
Like we went to that one. It was just in like a little area in like the upstairs of a building. It was just kind of a small.
Wait a second. So you didn't know about the first BronyCon and you call yourself a brony? Oh my. What a... This is a farce.
I've been to everyone's after
this
that.
This is a farce.
Well, that one was in a... it was in a loft above a textile factory. Then the next one was at a hotel, if I'm thinking right. And this one was...
The Meadowlands Convention Center.
Because they had just about 4,000 people in attendance.
Mm-hmm. And a big guest list, too. Like, the first one, we had Jason Teason come in. That was pretty cool. The second one, we had Andrea Libman, who plays Pinkie Pie and Fluttershy. We had Ashley Ball, who plays Rainbow Dash, Applejack. And Nicole Oliver was there, too, right? She plays Celestian Cheerily.
Yes.
Well, Andrea Libman came back for this. Nicole Oliver was also back. The big three this time, we had Lauren Faust, the creator of the show, which is always cool. John Delancey. He played Discord, but most people would probably know him best as Q in Star Trek.
I think most people would probably know him best from the handful of episodes from season 2 of Breaking Bad, in which he played Jesse's girlfriend's father slash landlord.
Slash pilot.
I'm sorry.
No, aircraft controller.
He
was an air traffic controller.
Yeah.
And we had Tara Strong there, who plays Twilight Sparkle, and you could hear her in just about everything that has voice acting in it.
I think people would also know John Delancey from his role on Torchwood Miracle Day.
Yeah.
Okay, Mr. John Delancey fan. Good job.
He was also Q on Star Trek.
I said that.
I don't know.
Wasn't he Q on Star Trek? I don't know what the second snap does.
It's still erasing your memory.
Okay.
It makes your skin blue.
Oh, cool.
Eric's a Smurf now.
Sweet.
No, he's a guy from Avatar.
He's both. Continue.
So there were a lot of other guests there. We had Peter New, who plays Big Macintosh. I don't know how to pronounce her last name correctly, so I apologize.
Macintosh.
But Kathy Weasluck, I believe, is how you pronounce her
Macintosh,
last name.
Macintosh, like the computer?
I would imagine more like Apple.
Apple computers?
Yes.
Okay.
Kathy Weasluck, I was talking about. She plays Spike and Mayor Mare. Lee Tucker.
Wait, I'm sorry.
Yes, Mayor Mare.
Alex, let me just say you're in for some pony puns. If you can't take this, you should probably step
out of the room. You wanna get some hit on this kitty cat?
Yeah, hook me off.
Alright.
Boop boop boop. Wow, that one had Meyer's voice.
I programmed that one.
It was from a competing company.
Yeah.
Shall I continue?
Yeah, keep going. We're high on kitty cat.
Lee Tucker, he plays Snips, and in one episode, the Sea Serpent, who us bronies like to call Stephen Magnet.
You gotta love Stephen Magnet.
And also, we had two of the writers from the show. We had Megan McCarthy. She's known for a couple of episodes, including Dragon Shy. She wrote Lesson Zero. She worked on the Canterlot Wedding. And Amy Keating Rogers, who right now is probably best known for the last roundup with the whole Derpy fiasco. But she also worked on the season 1 finale, The Best Night Ever. Well, they both have a lot of great episodes under their belts. So it was a really big thing to have all of these people from the show there. although I have to say, they could have probably handled it better, because I sat in on a couple of the panels. This is one of my big complaints about it, actually. I sat in on a couple of the panels, and the audio really could have been a lot better. I was right there in the room, and I could barely hear what some of the panels were saying at all.
Yeah, I listened in on the live stream. A little bit of background for everybody. I was supposed to go, and I didn't go because something else came up, but I was there with my laptop for both days, pretty much, watching the panels, and I have to agree with Eric. You couldn't hear very much of what people were saying unless you turned the volume all the way up.
When did the rape bulls... What episode did the rape bulls come in?
We'll have to wait and see if it happens in season 3.
That's going
to
be a good episode.
I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah, so, I mean, it was just an exciting time being there. Even though we couldn't hear the guests so well, just having them...
And the lights went out, and we couldn't see them, and everyone died.
Oh, well, there was the fire.
Oh, wow. Ooh. That's great.
Was there deaths?
Not a one.
Oh.
Yeah, there was a little incident during one of the panels where one of the lighting fixtures went on fire. Everyone had to be evacuated from the building. Funnily enough, Peter knew Big Macintosh was giving people fire safety tips. So that was kind of funny, I thought.
Kind of talking people out of the building. Remain calm, everyone. There's a small fire.
I mean, it was the things he was saying weren't funny. I mean, remain calm isn't very funny.
You're all gonna die.
But it's funny when you're high on kitty drip.
Meow.
But, yeah. So what were some of the panels that you liked, Eric, that you went to?
Well, actually, my favorite wasn't even involving the big guests there. My favorite was the video I was telling you about. They had a bunch of PMVers, Pony Music Video makers. who had... Last year, they had put together a video called Ponies the Anthology, which went about 20 or so minutes long, I think. And it was just a lot of rapid-fire skits, a lot of them set to music, just skit after skit after skit. They put out the sequel this year, which is an hour and a half long. And just, like, you would think a feature-length movie, like, who's going to sit there and watch a music, kind of music video for an hour and a half and have it, like, be entertaining the whole way through. But this was, they had so many good little shorts in this thing, it was amazing. They had to split that panel up in half because of the fire. We kind of had to. It's always good to say, this happened because of the fire.
Yeah, I was actually watching the panel with the writers that the fire happened during. And the person who was manning the live stream camera actually panned up, and you can see the light fixture that had caught fire sparking and melting, and it was pretty intense.
One time when I was driving to work, the transformer across the street exploded and caught fire.
Was it Bumblebee?
It was Optimus Prime, you dick.
Sorry.
Oh.
Ouch.
Sorry, he died in that one movie.
He died for your sins.
No, that was Jesus.
Same difference.
Close enough.
Close enough, yes.
But it was pretty unnerving because, you know, they were just sitting there doing a panel, you know, the writers were answering questions, and all of a sudden, I forget who it was, someone just said, "Is it raining flaming hot plastic on people in the audience?" And turned out, you know, the light wasn't above anyone, so no one was hurt. But yeah, there was a light that had burst into flames.
I was going to say, were those bronies so intent on being at the con that they were going to sit through raining hot plastic and not say anything just to hear people talk?
I'm on fire, but I can't
leave. You know what? That can happen at any con.
Yeah.
But,
I won't even say it's just the bronies. There are lots of fans.
Someone died at Comic-Con.
I did think it was really funny, though, that a lot of people, when they hear fire, would be like, "Oh, fire, get out," and there would be a panic in the building. There was the fire. People just kind of casually stood up, walked a little bit away, turned around, took pictures of the fire. You know, we were cool. We knew what we were doing.
Or you're just stupid and don't care about your guys' safety.
We were cool. I'm going with cool.
Because if there was a fire, friendship would save them or something.
Totally. Celestia would put that shit out.
Yeah.
I don't believe that.
The power of Celestia. Yeah, I mean, like, I didn't sit in on a lot of panels because the ones I sat in on, just the audio difficulties kind of stopped me from sitting there and paying a lot of attention. I was mainly with a couple of friends of mine, and we spent a lot of time at the vendors area, which, again, was a huge change from the other BronyCons. I mean, There was maybe a couple tables at the one Ryan and I went to. The one after that had maybe four or five tables. This one was huge. I mean, obviously it's not the size of like a Comic-Con vendor area, but this was gigantic, four rows.
Like an Icon area?
Yeah, I'd say maybe Icon. Maybe a little less, but still. It's
respectable.
Yeah. A lot of big bloggers were there. A lot of people have big Tumblrs. I'm just going to throw out a couple names. I mean, it's not going to mean anything to you guys who don't watch ponies.
As long as one of them's not Twizzle.
I'll link to their Tumblrs in the show notes, so if people want to check out their pony art.
The famous Tumblrs.
We had Rye is a big one. She does a lot of the My Little Pony Chubbies that people follow a lot.
Chubbies.
Eric's got a My Little Pony Chubby.
I hate you.
You walked into that one.
Shut up.
it's a minefield, Eric. Be careful.
John Jaseko was there. A lot of people follow his Princess Molestia blog.
Molestia.
Yeah, I was specifically saying that name to see what you guys would say.
Kitty cats.
This one guy, Will Draw, who does an Ask Surprise blog. Specky, who does a Ask Fluttershy and Pinkie Pie. The place was packed. People were coming from all over the place to be here. And it was just a really good time. I don't even remember how much money I spent at that vendor area.
Was it more than $7?
Yes.
More than $17?
Yes.
More than $700?
No.
Less than $699?
No.
So you spent $700 exactly.
Yes.
that's a lot of money.
I don't remember how much, but it obviously wasn't that much.
Meow.
Was there any other
questions? Did you meet any interesting people while you were there?
Well, I met up with a couple of my friends I've been talking to online for a year or so that was cool. If I say their names, you're just going to add them to the list of people that you keep insulting.
No,
because you're not giving them a shout-out.
That's true.
That's reserved for
as Twizzle. Long as one of them's not Twizzle.
Nah, he wasn't able to make it.
Good. He doesn't deserve it. And if he did, he'd be the one sitting under the melting hot plastic.
Yep.
They're like, oh, we've got a special seat for you.
You're going to land right on his face.
Yeah, I just met up with a couple of my friends, Lucky Chance, Nervash, Zip. Zip was funny because...
Whoa. I said you could say their names.
No, but this is important. Because he was carrying a gigantic Scootaloo. Scootaloo's one of the characters in the show. He was carrying a gigantic Scootaloo plush around. And,
did he catch fire?
No. Apparently, at some point, someone had... started talking to him, and he just thought it was a person from the con, but it turned out it was the press. So now there's this Associated Press article going around, and there was a CNN news report about BronyCon, and right there is a big picture of him carrying this giant Scootaloo.
Oh, that's interesting.
So it's kind of...
You just made me so sad.
He's famous now.
That the AP and CNN picked it up.
That's right. The girl who reported on CNN even showed a picture of her own pony. It was a recolored rarity.
And people did fan art of it later on, I
They
heard.
Did.
Yeah.
Did the Herald cover it?
No. No. I'm gonna file that story into the same folder with the New York Times review of the Doritos Locos Taco from Taco Bell as a pillar of journalism that makes me proud to be a member of the profession.
Yeah, but I mean, overall, it was a good time. I think it was totally worth the money. I'm a little disappointed that they changed their thing. They used to do the BronyCons twice a year, and now they're going to just once a year. But I mean, that'll also give them time to make sure to put out the best thing they possibly can. So I'm definitely looking forward to next year.
When is it?
I don't think they announced a definite date yet, but I know it's summer. They're going to be doing it every summer.
Also, they've got cons springing up all over the country now. There's Everfree Northwest and Canterlot Gardens, or is that the one in Europe?
I think that's the Europe one. I forget.
Well, there are My Little Pony cons springing up all over the place, and you know, chances are wherever you are, there's probably one in your area.
How many? What'd you rate in Glory's Deaths of Battle? How many?
Out of how many?
Five.
You don't even know our own rating system?
I forgot.
God.
I think you were the one high on Kitty Cat.
I mean, I would rate it a 5. I had a fantastic time there. They put together a good con. The audio was a problem, and the fire was a problem. But I mean,
I'm concerned about dying in the fire. It's a valid concern.
I'd still give it a 5.
So even with the bad audio, even with a possible 5, death,
I had a fantastic time.
It was
time.
The best it possibly can be. Can get no better.
Those bronies braved bad audio and death.
That's right.
A broken PA.
So now, I mean,
lines.
If My Little Pony can have a big convention, I think it's time we start working on the Ragnerd Con.
No.
Con Nerd Rock.
Yeah. I like Con Rag Con Rock.
Rag Con Rock.
For all our 100 viewers.
Yeah.
We don't have any viewers.
For our 100 listeners.
We have more than 100.
102.
Our hundreds, our hundreds of listeners.
Guys, if we held a free con in, like, Meyer's house, would you guys come?
No.
All right, we'll do it in my house.
No, the Meyer's just saying he wouldn't come.
Oh, well, you don't have to be there.
Yeah.
We'll just have it in your house. Panels.
I don't want Twizzle at my house.
Twizzle's not invited.
Okay.
We'll have a bouncer to keep him away.
Yeah, we'll have your sister be one of the keynote speakers.
And there'll be free pal kisses for everybody.
Yep. That's Meyer's dog, by the way.
Yeah.
Just in case you were wondering what a pal was.
And he That's is Meyer's a kissing dog. Master.
Maybe we could set up a kissing booth with Meyer, too.
Ah.
Well, just in closing, I would like to say that I thought it was pretty hilarious, because watching all of the panels... the creators of My Little Pony and the voice actors made out like bandits because everybody gave them presents and free hugs. That was pretty much like the beginning of every panel was the presents and free hugs section.
That gigantic picture they gave Lauren Faust.
Right.
With her
alicorn pony on it. And the other thing I thought was pretty hilarious was that was the weekend that a lot of those people found Twitter. Because I'm not, I can't say for certain because I wasn't there, but I'm guessing that Tara Strong said, yeah, you should join Twitter and talk them all into it.
Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure that's exactly how it went with Lauren Faust.
Cool story, bro.
So, what are your final thoughts, Eric?
My final thoughts was that, again, it was absolutely worth the money I spent to go there. It was, I would definitely go to the next one. Well, I've been to the last three, and it was absolutely a fantastic time.
How much are tickets?
I think when I paid for it, the ticket was $60.
Yeah, but there was a jump in price. Yeah. I paid $60, so bye-bye to that $60.
But at least you got to watch the free webcast.
Yeah, I did. Probably would have been better to be there.
At least at home, you didn't have to worry about raining hot plastic.
Yeah, that's true. That's not really a danger. Oh, God! Oh,
oh, okay, ow, all right. Oh. We're going to have to take a little break.
Where's Peter now? Where's fire. Peter New?
Put me out.
All right.
Put me out.
I don't know what to do. Peter
Ryan's,
New is
Ryan's melting, so ow. we're going to take a little break.
I had a fire.
Ow. Oh.
Damn you, Meyer.
All right, so we'll...
Kitty cat milk.
We'll take a little break, because I think we're going to have to unhook Meyer from his kitty cat IV, because he's starting to set fires. So right. we'll be right back after this.
Let's go.
Department has cleared us to re-enter the building.
Oh.
We've disconnected Meyer's IV, so hopefully there won't be any more fires.
But now, how about that music break?
That was a good music break.
Yeah.
Just so you guys know, all the music from this episode is courtesy of Mike Drazka. You know, we'll mention again later. We'll link to his stuff at the end in the show notes, but you should definitely check him out because he's been giving us some quality stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can download his stuff on iTunes. Definitely check him out.
Yep. So, speaking of iTunes, one thing we've promised to do is that when people give us 5-star reviews, we're going to read them on the air. So just to show how much we care about our fans, that's what we're going to do. So
we care about you guys. You guys are great.
Except for Twizzle.
Except for Twizzle.
I like Twizzle.
Twizzle can suck an egg.
Can you really consider Twizzle a fan if he hasn't, you know, called us or left us an email?
I would consider him more an object of derision.
He's just full of empty promises, Twizzle. He's a liar and a fiend and a villain, and I don't like him. Just
wow,
like
a Stephanie. Fiend. You should tell Twizzle that he's been called a fiend.
Okay.
Yeah. You know what? I would agree. He's a fiend.
Like.
Yeah. Okay. So we're gonna jump into the comments here. We have. I have to say we have only 5-star comments. So we're pretty good.
Yeah. You listen to 5-star quality shit.
However, we also only have
4 comments.
4 comments.
But that we're at 100% vibes.
Yeah. So that's our perfect. First one is from Mr. Poppintwist, who is Derek, who is on our last episode, you may remember.
And from APs.
Yes, and from our APs.
You may also remember us hounding him to change his review from a 4-star review to a 5-star review.
And that proves something to you people. If you want something to happen, bother the person who can make it happen until it happens.
Except apparently having Twizzle earn a shout-out.
Yep.
That never happens, no matter how much you bother him.
Well, Twizzle's either going to call us or kill us all. Either of those things.
All right. So, Mr. Poppintwist writes, "This is the perfect show for nerds and geeks by nerds and geeks. All about comics, gaming, movies, TV, and anything else one geek out over discussed with passion, but with 5 different opinions. So sometimes the fur will fly." Oh, Mr. Poppintwist.
Eric's hairy.
"You should definitely check it out, as you will surely agree with at least one of the guys. --" So thank you very much, Derek. I don't know exactly how to pronounce --" but that was very kind of you.
All right, and
that's
our second...
Apes emoticon smiley face.
What?
Oh, okay, that's emoticon smiley face.
Alex doesn't understand emotions. All right, so
they don't jive with my programming.
Our second review is from Joe J. Rick. He says, "A wonderful mix of dice rolling and radio play." I guess he's referring to our actual plays. He says, "I was turned on to this podcast by a dungeon master and fellow adventurer after our first night of Fiasco. I must say that I am enjoying what I've heard so far. The group is very funny and manages to take on a variety of characters with unique voices and entertaining dialogue. It comes out sounding less like a game and much more like a radio play. These players somehow manage to keep the story moving forward without straying from the topic or losing their sense of humor. These gentlemen make great improvisational comedians."
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you
so much.
I'm glad to see that the community theater classes I took are paying off.
That's all of those semesters of acting class that I took are...
I just say stuff.
All right, our third review here, our third 5-star review, is from I'm a Jin 12345 8765.
You are a Jin.
I think that's I'm a Jin, kind of a pun play on Imagine as well.
Oh, that's good.
Or Jin from Lost.
Hmm.
Or a
he's
Jin,
a genie.
Ooh.
That's how it's spelled, D-J-I-N-N.
Oh, it's from a genie!
Like Aladdin, your favorite show, TV, come on, movie.
It was also a TV show, which was my favorite.
Oh, okay.
Please read, Eric.
All right. "I work a lot, and most of my work is pretty menial. Podcasts are a great way to pass the time. I'm not much for the episodes, but the actual plays are better than most. Most either drag on or have terrible quality. This podcast suffers neither problem. The quality isn't exceptional, but I can hear everyone just fine. But even better, everyone involved is always very sharp and witty. For anyone looking to waste a little time, this, along with RPPR, have some of the most original scenarios and good role-playing I've heard on the net."
Well, thank you for wasting your time with us. I often also feel like our APs are a good waste of time.
Yeah, we enjoy playing them.
This is from Vicky515. And she says, well, I'm guessing it's a she. Maybe it's a guy using Vicky, I don't know.
You never know.
And it says, "Just yes. Period."
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
And we also promised that we would read the emails we receive. So we have a new batch of emails. The first one is from, I don't want to say his name, it's from Brian K. And Brian K. writes, Derpy is best pony. Thank you, Brian K.
That's a good point you make.
It's a very insightful point.
I hate you, Brian K.
It's almost as insightful as the comment Ryan made during the interview.
Yes, that was that was a very insightful question.
Yes.
I would like to say a special thank you to Brian K., because he emailed us, and I can do that, and because he sent me some prints of Princess Luna from BronyCon via Eric.
Yep, no, via Fleur.
Via Fleur, okay.
Oh, I love ponies so much. That was a lie.
Good one, Mike.
Really?
Yeah. It's called acting something. I taught myself.
Meyer is a self-taught actor. All right, so our next email is from Robert P., again, who you may recognize from our last round of Ragged
and
Rock
And Meyer's
emails.
Crotch, mm-hmm. where he seems to have embedded himself.
All right, and Robert
penis
P.
My penis is now paying attention.
Robert P. writes, Hey guys, I just listened to your podcast where you replied to me, and I just wanted to say I was literally laughing my ass off. Or actually, he says LMAO, but I went ahead and expanded that. I am so happy to make a Meyer boner an actual term. I tried to submit it to Urban Dictionary, but they rejected it among Ragnarok. I would also like to inform you that you only had two people send you things that time because I was the super squeaky guy.
Referring to the voicemails we played.
Right, right.
That was really creepy, Robert.
Please never do that again. I didn't want you to have any good feeling about having friends. So he took us down a peg.
Oh.
We have been shamed and humbled by Robert P.
Meyer boner said.
Meyer is losing his chub. Actually, that might be the drugs. And the woman who wants Meyer's barbed penis was mentioned in your Ragnarlib. She was the mother. She was looking for a barbed dildo, and she found the supernova. Good luck.
Right.
Oh, so the mom from If You Give a Mouse a Cookie
yes.
apparently wants Meyer's junk.
There you go, Meyer.
Maybe, well, she's going to get it then.
Well, Robert, you know, even though you were mocking us, I do hope that you managed to reattach your ass. Because otherwise sitting can be pretty difficult.
I am going to fuck the mom from If You Give a Mouse a Cookie.
And keep trying to get Ragged Rock and Meyer Boner onto Urban Dictionary, because why not?
Yeah, everybody's got to have a dream.
Yep.
It'll make...
That's our dream now, Robert. Get us onto Urban Dictionary. If you do...
My Meyer boner will grow 5 sizes that day.
Well, let me touch it.
Ooh. I'm not sure about that.
I'm making promises that I can't cash.
That's true.
Apparently, I also can't speak.
That's also true.
That about wraps it up for our 5-star reviews and our emails. So thank you all. Even those of you who shamed us, you know, put us back in our place. It was still lovely to hear from you. You can email us if you want us to read your email on the show at info@ragnarok.com. You can leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, and we'll read that as well. Or, none of you have taken us up on this in the past couple of months, you can call our Google Voice number. It's 516-362-6373 or 516-362-NERD.
Oh, yeah. Whoa.
Nerd.
That's clever, Ryan.
Yeah, I thought that up all on my own.
That's good.
Good for you.
Just like that question that I asked Larry Kenny earlier.
You mean that one question you asked Larry Kenny?
You're going to be riding that for months.
Yeah. I've been complimented by a celebrity. That's going to be...
Hey, you think that's good? I've been insulted by a celebrity. I think that's better. I'll take an insult from a celebrity over a compliment from a celebrity any day.
All right.
Which apparently I'll have to do.
Mm. You'll have to live with that.
Yes. So, again, well, this has been another episode of Ragged Rock. Another thank you to Larry Kenny for taking the time to answer our stupid questions. Really appreciate him coming on the show. Yeah, and like Ryan already gave us all our contact info, so hit us up, bitches, and we will read you on the air.
But you're not actually bitches, we like you.
No, they're bitches.
I don't know, we don't like Twizzle.
Twizzle's a bitch.
Twizzle, yeah, okay. Twizzle's a, yeah.
Twizzle's a bitch.
I don't even want to hear from Twizzle anymore, just go away, Twizzle.
Well, he did, we keep bringing him up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm gonna keep...
We keep dragging his corpse out of its grave and beating it and peeing on it and...
I like him less than I like Jeff Lowe.
Wow.
Damn.
after the horrible shit
I
he
like
did
him
to Jeff Loeb
less
last time.
Than I like Hitler.
Wow. That's intense.
Well, you did describe him as a fiend, so.
Yes. Well, if he's a fiend, he's definitely worse than Hitler.
I have no idea what Twizzle looks like, but I'm certain that he owns a cape now.
Now I'm just kind of picturing a giant Twizzler with a cape and a dastardly mustache.
He lives under a basement somewhere.
Under a basement.
Yes. In a
sub-basement.
Yeah, he lives in a sub-basement.
Wow.
And he plays a keyboard.
Like the
Phantom right. of the Opera?
Yeah.
Like the Phantom except, of the Sub-Basement.
Except like a little Yamaha keyboard?
Yeah. Alright.
So anyway.
Yeah, so this has been episode 24, our interview with Larry Kenny, or the Kitty Cat Conundrum.
Kitty Cat.
Okay, he's back on the drugs.
Oh, God. Alright, yeah, so we're going to wrap this up. Until next time, I'm Alex.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Eric.
And I'm Maya.
And this has been another episode of Ragnarok.
He's starting another fire, guys.
Oh, crap.
I haven't even get the drugs. I put them away. I locked them up.
I'll get the fire extinguisher. Oh, God, it's spreading.
Okay, Eric, you tackle him.
We should get the fire extinguisher with Alex's sound effects.